Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 30th day of July 2010. Well, can the market sustain the end-of-the-month rally? We'll ask this and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, all through the half hour, in fact, we'll talk with our guest, Terry Rogensack of the Hightower Report. Our panelists in studio today include Pete Manhart of the Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question, and we'll address it first to Terry Rogensack, our guest. On the phone line, Terry, can the wheat market continue to rally in the month of August?
I believe the wheat market still has some more upside potential in it. Certainly, a tremendous amount of grain is at risk in the Black Sea region. We had temperatures this week 105 to 110 degrees in the key agricultural growing areas, Russia and Ukraine, and they're sitting there without moisture and frying up. So there is more upside because there is no rain in the forecast.
Bill Mayer, what do you think?
Well, I think when you see the what's happened here in the last 10 days, and as Terry was saying, as far as the weather goes, I think there's enough momentum in this market and probably enough money to come into it to continue to push it higher. Do the fundamentals justify it in the long run? I guess I have a little bit of a problem seeing the justification, you know, from a global wheat standpoint, but we're in a situation where you've got the end users coming in and trying to get covered, and the wheat is a staple, and we saw a few years ago how exciting the market can get when we're in these situations.
And Pete Manhart.
Well, and I think the funds have finally realized that it is a shorter supply wheat crop, and are frantic to get coverage and to get in there and hopefully make some money for them. So they're buying that plus corn plus beans.
The numbers in the wheat market finished up like this. $6.63 was the top, the low at 582.5. A settlement price, 65 and a quarter cents, higher on the week at $6.61.5. July wheat at $7.10 and a quarter finished 45 and three quarters higher. Terry, I think I heard you try to sneak back in there on the wheat market.
Yeah, just one more thing on the wheat market. Trend following funds net short 15,000 contracts as of July 27th. And weekly export sales this week, we had Brazil and Egypt both buying U.S. wheat. Brazil, the second biggest importer in the world. Egypt, the first biggest importer in the world.
And the two of those things combined to tell you what?
Tell you that the rally so far is just beginning to attract pretty good commercial buying.
Attracting commercial buying. That means what for the corn market, Terry, do you think? Because there has been, I suppose, over the last several years, Black Sea wheat that's been competing in the corn market. That's relatively new. Hasn't happened for quite some time. It's certainly not since the former Soviet system fell apart.
you have feed wheat and you have feed grains in the region, some estimates as high as 12 to 15 million tons that will not be exported from Ukraine, Russia, and the whole region. So that's got to be made up somewhere.
Does it give you and the other two of you, too, much hope that the corn market continue to sustain the current rally? Terry?
Sure, I'd be glad to take that on. The corn market, you're looking at, let's say you had a 164 yield. You're looking at the possibility with the Russia-Ukraine situation and with the China situation, I would say you'd have to raise your export outlook maybe up to 2.1 billion bushels for the coming year. So even if you had a 164 yield, you're looking at a 9.3% stocks to usage. That'd be the second lowest stocks to usage since 1973.
Can you get as friendly this marketplace as Terry's talking about at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think, of course, it all depends on where the yield comes in. But I think I would go right along with the numbers there that Terry's talking as far as right around the billion bushel carryout or less. If we don't raise prices high enough here to ration some usage, and I guess really, you know, if I look at, we were basically the same price on December corn 2 weeks ago on the close on Friday, and wheat's gone up about 70 cents since then. And it, I think if I'm correct on that, and corn basically is, you know, still in the same place. So I was a little bit disappointed that the corn market didn't react over the last two-week period here.
Corn market, by the way, had a high this week of 393 and a quarter in the September, a low at 61 and three quarters. Settlement price week over week up 21 and a half cents at $3.92 and three quarters. December corn at 406 and three quarters, up 22 and a quarter. Were you disappointed that corn didn't put in more of a rally than it did?
Yeah, we hit 410, 10 days ago or less, and then we went right back to 376. In fact, we touched 376 early this week, and here we are at 406. So there's lots of people out there wanting to be long in the wheat. As Terry said, they got to cover shorts before they can get long. But lots of worries about what the crop size will be, and some people don't think we'll make the USDA average. I don't know where it'll come in this next report, but That report in August will also possibly help push things, especially if we don't make the USDA average.
Hey, Terry, can you go down the supply line and tell me what kind of numbers you're working with at this point? Because the ethanol thing might be interesting as we work through this process with US EPA.
I think a combination, if you end up with no ethanol subsidy, you're still going to see a fairly decent demand market. And I would say for the old crop season, you're still looking at the possibility 25, 50 million bushel increase in old crop exports because of what's happened out of China, and your pace is already ahead. You are you're looking at a pretty much dialed in ethanol usage for this year and maybe for next year, depending on what they do with the subsidy. But what are we going to do to displace the 12 to 15 million tons of feed grain, barley, and feed wheat that is not going out on the world market? That's 450 to 600 million bushels. And what about China? What are they going to do for a new crop? USDA really doesn't have much in there. What if they import 50 million bushels? Maybe they import 250 million. So you have a situation where the corn market followed the weather down over into earlier this week until we held pretty good support there, 377, and turned back up mainly on demand. Keep in mind the wheat market rallying up. You got a lot of people buying wheat, selling corn too. So we got some people short the corn market into the what looked like really good weather, and now they're caught as well.
Maybe I better pull it. Well, go ahead.
I was just following up on the ethanol thing there, Terry. As you look at current natural gas current input cost from the ethanol producer standpoint, what kind of a cash corn price, you know, can you still create profits in the ethanol, in say a typical ethanol producer? And I realize that's probably not a reality, a typical producer out there.
I do not have the matrix numbers right in front of me. I know margins have been jumping around, and I think a lot depends on what happens with the energy markets. But I guess I don't see an obstacle ahead. Certainly we're going to be talking about what about cutting the subsidy or the blending credit or taking it away altogether, but we're also going to be talking about moving to a 15% blend rate. So I think you might have more but you do not have a serious demand issue right up front.
You don't think if we go to, let's say, if we go to E12, that doesn't create a demand issue that we have to worry about, or a supply issue, I suppose, that we have to worry about. If we go to E15, are we in a world of problem?
I think it'll help tighten, yes, it'll help tighten the demand outlook, yeah. You'll improve it.
I know it's really tough when you're talking about ethanol to talk about problems and supply-side problems. But let me turn this back around a different way. So how friendly can you get to the corn market? Because you sure sound friendly.
Well, I think the market's in a situation, if you do not have a new record high yield, you're looking at the possibility of, like Pete said, you get a 162 yield, and you get increases in export demand in the forecast, you're looking at a very tight situation. I would say 423, 435, and 493 are my next upside objectives for Dease corn.
Okay. Let's go back. I want to come back to the wheat market, and then we'll back into corn and soybeans again, because there will be some folks that are now making some decisions. They'll have corn coming off the field fairly early this year, unlike last year. They'll be making some decisions about what they may or may not want to do with wheat, especially in southern Illinois, southern Indiana, soft red winter wheat country. Should they consider wheat in the coming year? And if they do, how much of it should they price out when they make the decision to put it in the ground?
Yeah, I had clients today that are going to plant wheat this fall that were actually pricing part of that wheat. They had a 50 to 60 basis. It got to 7-10 or something, and they were actually looking at pricing that at that 650, 660 area. Do you think that's a good idea?
Terry?
Yes, I do. I think if you're looking at especially double crop acres for the coming year, I think the rally is already going to attract some pretty good acres, but a lot of people looking at the need for maybe 2 to 3 million more acres of wheat. There's also going to be people looking at 3 to 5 million more acres in corn for the coming year. So you're kind of starting to get yourself in a situation where it's going to be tight to look at putting acres in.
And I think that kind of leads us into, you know, the real question out here, and that is, we've all talked earlier here as far as that we definitely have to respect this market. We can see some upside potential in both the wheat and corn, and as we get in soybeans, I'm sure on beans too. How do we approach the market and market our cash crops out here in this kind of environment? And I think the approach to take is to respect the market but still take advantage of the opportunities, and I really lean towards some option type strategies when you're in a volatile environment like we're seeing here and need to leave the upside open on at least a portion of this grain. But you also probably shouldn't go out and switch to wheat acres unless you have some kind of floor set in there too.
Examples for option strategies?
On the wheat side of things, you can come in, buy a put, sell a call option for, I mean, some of the call options really have some volatility in them. I'd go out of the money quite a ways, a couple of dollars, and you can still get some good money out of them. And I think that's an excellent strategy to try to make sure you've got some kind of floor locked in there.
How about for corn?
Similar, but I probably would stick more with just probably buying the put side of it and making cash sales. I think if you go along here and you're getting this close to harvest on corn, you right. need to control your logistics.
Yeah, we've said it before many times, and it's been said several times in the past week. July is the month for corn. August is the month for soybeans. Let's deal with July. We're still in that month at this point, and corn. Probably have a good idea of what the corn crop looks like at this time. Should farmers be picking out some places to make sales, Pete?
Well, it depends on if they've sold anything or not. I've got a lot of farmers that sold a big amount back at the $4 and up higher back in the December, January area last year for this coming crop. And if you've got 50, 60% of it sold at those places and you've got crop insurance on the other at 404, I would be in a little bit of a waiting game to sell any more cash because you don't know what the yields are. We've got some people talking about yields of, they just don't know yet because of the varied water mess we've had through the Midwest. And like Terry said, the 164 or 162 makes a heck of a difference on price.
Terry?
Yeah, in corn, I'd take a look at buying a $4 put for a quarter, 25 cents. Monitor the 480 calls. You could sell a 480 call right now for 10.5, or you could wait and you get the rally in corn, then you sell the 480 call. But right now you can lock in a window 385 to 465 just buying that $4 put, selling that 480 call.
That's Terry Rogenczak. He's with Hightower and is here on Commodity Week for this 30th day of July. Our guests in studio include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. We'll be back with more in just 2 minutes.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist here at the Illinois State Water Survey within the Institute of Natural Resource Sustainability on the campus of the University of Illinois. Overall, this week was warm and humid with heavy rains in western and northern Illinois. These rains have caused considerable flooding in low-lying areas. However, cooler and drier air from Canada moved in over the state by the end of the week, providing some relief. Far southern Illinois, south of I-64, received only scattered rains and is categorized as being abnormally dry by the U.S. Drought Monitor. The statewide average rainfall for July is 5.3 inches, which is 1.6 inches above normal. The wettest July on record, by the way, was 1958 with 8 inches. The largest rainfall totals occurred in western and far northern Illinois, as well as the area around Charleston, where amounts of 8 to 12 inches were common. Southern Illinois was much drier in July as a whole, with amounts of only 1 to 3 inches in many locations. The statewide average temperature for July was 77.8 degrees, which is 2 degrees above average, which is warm but not record-breaking. According to the National Weather Service, temperatures this weekend are expected to be in the mid-80s for the highs and mid-60s for the low. Warm, humid conditions will return by Monday and remain with us for the week. Expect highs in the upper 80s and low 90s and lows in the upper 60s and lower 70s. The 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day forecasts both call for above normal temperatures and above normal rainfall for all of Illinois. The outlook for August is for an increased chance of above normal temperatures and near normal rainfall. For the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign, I'm state climatologist Jim Angel.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This edition was recorded on the 30th day of July, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason from University of Illinois Extension. Our guests in studio include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. Terry Rogenczak of the Hightower Report is on the phone line. Let's take up some of the other commodities, including soybeans, which this week had a high of $10.34¾, a low at $9.94¼. Actually, that's $10.54¾, and a low at $9.94¼. Settled at $10.52½. It was up 35½ cents on the week. The Novi beans at $10.05 were up 23¼ cents. Terry Rogenczak, if we're short of acres for wheat, short of acres of corn, are we necessarily short of acres of soybeans? And I don't want to get into a war just yet, but sounds like we could be.
Beans are where the yield is going to be so important on the beans. The northern corn belt looks so strong right now, so good with the high yields that if you end up with a 44 yield, you have a major supply issue, negative supply issue on hand. And if you end up with a 40 yield, you're talking about extreme tightness. So I think August is going to be a big deal. Prices are already up here. You can buy a 980 put, sell an 1180 call. costs you 22 cents, and you've got a 9.58 to 11.58 price range locked in. And I think that's probably the way to go right now.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Or, you know, you can always adjust the strikes and the premiums to fit the individual needs. But I guess the question I'd have for Terry, you talked about on the corn, you know, on the exports and the fact that we probably needed to adjust the exports up some. Where do you think we're at, or where do you think the USDA is on the soybean export side of it? Are we low there?
I think we're still a little bit low, yeah. I mean, and I think that's the main driving factor here has just been demand adjustments higher. And it's so surprising that with the huge Argentina and Brazil crops that we are still looking at strong export demand for U.S. soybeans. Sure surprised me. And
is China still going to buy from us and not go down there and buy from South America? I mean, look at what they bought last week from us, a huge amount.
Huge amount. A lot of it's new crop, and China's still going to be a strong buyer in the coming year, but we are looking at record world-ending stocks, and that assumes that you have a huge reduction, 8.5 million tons out of South America for the coming year. So we are in a situation where the world supply could be pretty burdensome if we don't watch out.
Do you think that reduction will really come? I mean, in the United States, we do adjust, but they don't adjust to other crops as easily. Argentina does, but Brazil does not.
And what do you mean by adjust?
No, we can. Well, in the U.S., we move acres around fairly quickly and easily from corn to wheat to soybeans, in the south to rice sometimes. But it seems to me that in Brazil, that they're a one crop, and they do come back and double crop corn on soybeans, but they're going to grow beans one way or the other.
Oh, I think so. The USDA is at a 65 million ton crop for the coming year for Brazil.
Yeah, well, the question was, will they really lose those acres or hectares, as the case might be?
I don't think they will, no. I think Brazil will continue to push forward. There's already estimates out there. I heard two this week, 70 and 71 million for production for the coming year. So you're looking at the possibility of, if nothing changes, then you have to add another 8.5 million tons to the South America crop for the coming year.
I suppose another good reason to plant wheat acres and sell it up front if you can, right?
Yes.
What do you think about the yields? I mean, we haven't gone through August yet, but do you think that, you know, you were talking about that 44 on bean. Do you think that's reasonable, or is that too low or too high, or what's your idea on that?
Crop conditions are exactly the same as last year. Last year we had a 44 yield, and if you look at crops in Iowa and north of there, Minnesota crops are just unbelievably strong looking so far. So it's going to be a real test for the bean, but right now, I'd be leaning toward the high end on yield. The extended forecast models keep getting watered down. So hot and wet is a good combination for the bean yield.
I think you and Todd there were kind of getting into. So you agree? I just want to make sure I'm clear on what the conclusion was there, that the adjustment in acres of the various crops will probably come in the United States, and we could get into a situation where we're buying for acres through price levels as we move into the winter.
Yes, that's correct. And will that be enough to support the market if we do end up with a good yield in the U.S., I think we'll have a burdensome supply, and might be looking at a good reduction in acres for next year in the U.S., but that does not necessarily mean that we won't have the world supply that we need.
What is it, Terry, and the rest of you, that might, let's say the growing season finishes normal and the averages come out, what is it that might put a lid on the marketplace? U.S. EPA does nothing, says E10's fine. They go ahead and they get rid of some of the tax incentives. What are the things that you would be on the lookout fundamentally that could change the way you feel today? Terry?
I think if you have a 45 yield, you're looking at 500 million bushel carryout. You're looking at the potential for world carryout to hit another new record high for the coming year, and I think, you know, if you don't have the weather in August to support the rally, I think Nove beans could be 10.25 area, could be an area you'd be looking at a top for the Nove beans.
I definitely think that supply is in the short term going to be the determining factor as far as price direction. But as I look out longer term, I guess the concern I have is in the economic activity, the global economy, the ability for us to maintain this demand that we have out here. I realize that we're moving at a awfully good pace in some of the developing countries in that. But if we come into some kind of a meltdown from an economic standpoint, I guess that's probably my biggest concern from the standpoint of turning the trend back the other way.
On corn, getting back to it, what kind of a number are you looking at, the high end or low end or anywhere in particular on corn yields at all for this year?
I guess I would be near the 164 area right now.
Okay.
I just think that some issues in the south are going to be offset by record yields in the north.
Do you think that's pretty much what the trade is trading now?
I think they are. There's some people up there 165 and above still, and there are others who are raising their estimates to 162, and I guess I don't get some of the 160s and 159s that we heard earlier. We just did not get the weather to do that, I don't think, and we just did not have the heat to cause much of an issue. So I think corn's a demand-driven move higher, and beans are a potential issue from a supply perspective. They're a potential negative, could be a negative. So I think basically corn can gain on beans over the period in August, especially if you have the good weather.
And how quickly,
normal weather.
And how quickly do you think that the wheat rally would dissipate, if it does?
I think we're just going to have to work our way into what I would call an overbought condition when we get the end users to fill their needs and we get, I don't know what's going to form that top. Certainly the market is technically overbought. But we've got to get to the situation where the end users are in line. So I think there's probably some more up. The fund traders are still net short, and that's got me nervous that there's probably more up.
Terry, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Terry Rogensack is with the Hightower Report, joins us from Chicago, Illinois. Our guests in studio include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. A final word from you.
Well, take opportunities on these moves up to either protect what you're growing or to make some more hedges or cash sales. We do think there will be some good opportunities to do that in the next month.
And Bill Mayer is with Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois.
I would agree with Pete. We're coming up to another one of those real critical time frames, which is the August report time frame, August 12th. And we'll have some opportunities during these next 2 weeks, and make sure you take advantage of them, but respect the market.
You've been listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You have a safe week and safe marketing.